Coming up on Golf Today, we are back on the tractor one last time as Architect Week concludes with a visit from Rob Collins of Sweetens Cove in Tennessee, the nine-hole masterpiece that has become a must-play in golf. And as Steph Curry closes in on an all-time NBA record, what are the great records in golf, many with Tiger's name on them, some that are reachable, and some that may never, ever be broken? All coming your way right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Golf Today on a Friday. Damon Hack alongside Rich Lerner. We got golf this week in Florida. Yes, the QBE shootout next week, PNC Championship. You got a buddy looking for answers in the dirt in Florida.
That's right. Down in South Florida. So he calls me a couple of days ago. He's getting ready for like a week's worth of golf. I said, how you playing? He said, I'm steep on all my wedge shots. Steep. So we went to YouTube via the phone. I said, you need to shallow it out. Right? So we looked at it. We got him pumped up. So he goes out and plays yesterday. I called him this morning on his way to the first tee.
Okay.
How'd you do yesterday? He said, I laid the sod over every single one. And I feel really guilty. It's my fault. You know,
What are we doing?
Just stop dispensing advice, man. Stick to this. It's my fault.
The people that see me play golf and say, you work at Golf Channel?
I always tell them, hey, you have me mistaken. I work at the Home and Garden Network. Man. Yeah. So you got the wrong guy here. Yeah. It seems so simple to shallow it out. When we go out. Tour events, you watch the guys. That's my favorite part of the game, is to watch the tour pros from 120 to 130, and they zip the hips through. Oh. They get the core and the belt buckle going left fast with some speed, and they hit that little checker in there. Oh,
that's
right.
So it's like Latin.
It's shallow.
Latin.
It's not down into the ground. They're not digging dirt, right?
You know who needs no help with his wedges? How about Tiger? Tiger Woods, he's the news, baby, the newsmaker from the week. Tiger committed to play in next week's PNC Championship in Orlando with his son Charlie. They finished tied for seventh last year. This is the first time we'll see Woods play competitively since the 2020 PNC. Exciting news for the golf world. How exciting, social media going crazy. Tiger taking to Twitter, although it's been a long and challenging year. Very excited to close it out by competing in the PNC Championship with my son Charlie. I'm playing as a dad. And couldn't be more excited and proud. And that tweet, Richard, now been liked more than 83,000 times. The world of golf clearly excited to see him make his return.
It's awesome. If you'd have told a lot of guys out here that Tiger would be playing golf in December after what happened in February, we'd all be shocked. And obviously, it's very exciting. And saw him practicing a little bit last week. He seemed like he was in great spirits. Saw him in the workout room a little bit. So he's obviously in great shape. And hopefully, he can play good next week and start playing some tournaments on the PGA Tour. So we're all excited to see him back out and hope all the best for him.
What he went through from an injury point of view this year with the car accident, it was obviously speculation. Will we ever see him play golf again? It's exciting for the business of golf just to have Tiger Woods playing golf. You know, he's so important to everything we do. And obviously, you know, as a golf community, we're just excited to see him back in a golf course, him and Charlie next week. I'm sure there'll be a few eyeballs on, watching on TV. And, we're just, like I say, excited to see him back in action. And obviously, we're sort of curious to see how healthy he's going to look.
Well, it's just great to see. I think as everyone, we're more or less worried about his health and just being there for his kids the rest of their lives. And once we knew that was the case, then it was, hey, let's just get healthy. And if he can have some form or of participation in golf, then that'd be great. And I think we're reaping, we're in the bonus round now with him just being able to play golf and be out there and hopefully play some of the PGA tours.
Bonus time.
Yeah, that's well said, I think. You know, I think what we've all been reminded of, and, since that horrendous car crash and now with Tiger announcing he's going to play again next week, is not really about a comeback or can he catch Nicklaus at 18? We're going to discuss that. Or, will he get Snead's record with one more win? This is about family, right? That's what's most crucial at this point. Playing a game that you love with the ones that you love. That's what next week will 100% be about. It's just a Pop and his kid together. And that's what matters more than ever. And Tiger has to know that now, given how close he came to losing it all.
For someone who's won 82 times in 15 majors, you can make an argument that the biggest smile that he's ever had in this game was when he was playing with Charlie last year. And you think about, Rich, the statements he made to Henny Koyak, our colleague who works at Golf Digest, who talked about, you know, the lessons he's imparting to Charlie to this day. Charlie bringing home eights and nines on par fives, and Tiger saying, hey, kid, it's okay to get mad, but don't let those mistakes follow you around the golf course. Don't let it follow you that you're making compounding mistakes. But this is what Tiger is playing for now.
That's a great point. And this video is just uncanny, isn't it? I mean, the similarities in fathers and sons through the years, parents and their kids, the swings, the walks, the mannerisms have always been a highlight of the PNC Championship, always obvious. And sometimes, like with the Stadlers, hilariously so. But Tiger and Charlie's were striking. Like, oh, my goodness, that is nuts. And I don't know about you, but I have never, ever seen a young player so, and the word I would use is knowing, who knows how to do this already, so comfortable with so many tour-level ticks and touches and looks, the way he leans on his putter, reaches for a made putt, sets up over a shot, the way he dresses, the way he swings. It is advanced, yet natural. But again, Damon, it is not surprising because he has essentially been sitting at the feet of the golfing Dalai Lama. He knows. He's been meditating for a while.
Who's had a better incubation period than Charlie Wood, someone who clearly loves this game and wants to pursue it, and to be in that environment with Tiger and with Justin Thomas, who pops over for dinner and to talk trash with Charlie and to give it to each other. I mean, this is not going to feel too big for him, you know. And there were some stories last year that, you know, we shouldn't talk about Charlie's swing and let him be a kid, but he looks like he's ready already for the spotlight.
And I know there's going to be a tendency with Dad to run away with this, and will he play the Masters?
Yeah.
And could he win again? And we're going to have some fun with it in just a little bit. But truthfully, I think next week, let's just watch him hit shots.
Yeah.
Let's just enjoy that.
Yeah.
Right? Both. Let's watch both guys hit shots
special.
Next week.
It's going to be special.
Well, you know that the two of us love hoops. You know who's on a Tiger-like run in the NBA right now, has people buzzing, saying just about every single game, you can't do that, can you? Well, he can. And he does. We're talking Stephen Curry. He's a huge golf fan. He's a good player, scratch, and an enormous Tiger fan. Here's Stephen on the Huddle and Flow podcast earlier this year.
I'm curious, Steph, if you could play golf with one person, one round, living or dead, who would that one person be?
Tiger, for sure. It's just obviously kind of the hero of mine growing up, and to know like all he's been through over the course of his career, and you know, all the highs and lows and all that, I feel like that would be an amazing 4 or 5 hours out there to kind of hear his story from his lens. There's a lot of, you know, content out there now about him and around him, but I'd love to hear it from his words. So and to see, you know, him hit amazing golf shots all day, but that'd be my guy.
That was in February. You saw that before Tiger's crash. Hype building as Stephen closes in on Ray Allen's all-time record for three-pointers made. He needs 10 to break it. Outside chance it happens Saturday night in Philly. I can't wait. I'm going to be here with my oldest son. Record for threes made in a single game is 14. Stephen's teammate, Clay Thompson. Steph has made double-digit threes in a single game 22 times in his career. So if not Philly, maybe Indy Monday night. Stephen told me when he came to our set, the Ryder Cup, he patterned his ingenious off-ball movement after Pacer sharpshooting legend Reggie Miller. If not Indy, then Madison Square Garden Tuesday night, the Mecca would be positively electric. Stephen went for 54 in the Garden back in 2013. By the way, Curry's coach, Steve Kerr, owns a three-point record career percentage at 45, best in NBA history. Here are the odds, and PointsBet likes Steph to do it Monday night against the Pacers, and if not there, they like him Tuesday at the Garden. By the way, you saw that graphic against Ray Allen. This is sort of Tiger-like. Allen made 2,973 three-pointers in 1,300 games. Steph's played 514 fewer games. That's insane. And I think through it all, Damon, the narrative's begun to change. Steph's not just the greatest shooter of all time. He's one of the greatest players ever, and those lists tend to skew toward wings and bigs. Mm.
Singular athlete, much like Tiger Woods.
No question.
Himself. I keep reminding my boys, you are watching something special. Steph Curry at the age of 33, which got us thinking about golf's great records. Tiger's name all over the record books. You think about the PGA Tour wins, tied with Sam Snead, most consecutive cuts made on 142 starts. That mark, Tiger has said he's probably most proud of among all of his incredible marks. 15-shot win in the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Most wins at a single PGA Tour course. 8, 3 different courses. Most consecutive in total weeks at world number one, 281 straight and 683 total. And you wonder, are these unbreakable marks in some sense?
You know, 683, I think, is unbreakable.
Okay.
142 is unbreakable. 4 professional majors at the same time you hold all 4 titles, I don't think it's unbreakable.
Okay. You know, Speed, seen some close.
Speed got in the neighborhood in 2015, late at the Old Course. He had a great chance to win. But there are a lot of unbreakables, and you know that.
Byron Nelson, 18 wins in 1945.
11 in a row.
11 in a row. Not gonna see that again.
What else?
What else is unbreakable? I don't think we're going to see 6 straight USGA titles as Tiger did, winning 3 straight U.S. juniors and 3 straight U.S. amateurs from 1991 to 1996. What do you think about
well,
that?
Well, I think you're right, because if somebody wins 2 U.S. Ams in a row, they're gone. They're turning pro.
Nobody's, it's just simple math at this point.
Nobody's sticking around for 3 straight.
What about Jack's 18?
Doable. If, you know, it would take somebody special to come along.
But I got somebody for you.
But if Tiger can't do it, and I don't think he will, then it's going to be hard, and it may be unbreakable. No, I don't think Tiger's going to do it.
You think he's coming back just for family?
Could he win one? I think he could get to Snead in 83. I think that's the one that matters at this point. I think 3 majors to tie and 4 to break is a mountain just too high to climb at almost 46 years of age, given what his body has.
He's got the crampons, though, doesn't he? Don't you think? I think he's built different. I think he can look at Ben Hogan and the Hogan model. Hogan winning 6 major titles after that horrendous bus accident.
Go ahead. You make a case for Tiger.
He's the only one who could do it. We've seen this movie before. We keep counting him out from scandal and injury and chipping yips. And he's already made the greatest comeback of all time. And I'm watching the PGA Tour week to week, and I see some great players, but I still think they're playing checkers to Tiger's chess.
So what is it, the most... Nobody's ever won more than 1 major after, what, the age of 43, I think it is, something like that? More than
1.
It's
a different era. We just saw Phil Mickelson win a major at 50. Yeah, we saw Tom Watson tie for first at 59.
And you go back to Curry and this record that he is going to break in the next 2-3 games, we think. Who knows, maybe Saturday night. What records in golf are going to be broken or could be in the next, year, 2-3? I think the one that is in play week in, week out, we forget, given how good the PGA Tour players are these days, is 57, right? Mm. The low 18 holes at this point is 58.
Right.
You get on a par 70 at TPC River Highlands, where Furyk shot 58 on the right day, the right conditions, Sedgefield down at the Wyndham in Greensboro. Mm. Wailea, if the wind isn't blowing, somebody probably can peel off 13 birdies or a combination thereof to get to 13 under and shoot that 57. I think that would be in play.
Jin Young Ko with 14 consecutive rounds in the 60s. He's tied that. I do think 57 is in play with it, as far as these players hit the ball. But I'm still not ready to say Tiger is just going to be out here. He wouldn't put his body through this if he did. I still think he can beat the players with his mind, half of the players with his mind.
I agree. I don't think he would come back even to what they call the hit and giggle at the PNC if he didn't think he was going to be at a minimum respectable. I think he'll look good next week.
You know what
week.
Notice said? Notice said Tiger's a warrior. This is last week. And I know they're buddies, but he's playing a different game.
Look.
I think he's played the game. He's forgotten more about golf than the rest of us will ever even know about golf.
Could he roll out of bed until he's 50 if the body holds
and
up
and
contend at the Masters? Where institutional knowledge is huge.
Yeah.
We saw that in 2019. And guys get nervous at Augusta National. We saw that 12th hole in 2019.
Yeah.
Could he win there? Yes, he could. An open where older guys tend to play well, wisdom, experience, ball rolling out on a firmer golf course, distance not a huge issue. Could he win there? Yes. If he gets to 17, and here we are running way ahead. I just said 3 minutes ago, we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. We're just going to enjoy him playing golf. But for the sake of this argument about records,
Yeah.
You know, but no, I don't think he's getting to 18. I'm going to throw one more on the women's game out that I think is going to be really hard to beat. Lydia Ko, 10 LPGA Tour wins, Damon, before the age of 19. Beat that. I don't think it's happening.
Wow. I'll say Kathy Whitworth, 88.
That ain't happening.
Patty Berg, 15 majors.
No. Not,
probably untouchable.
Not happening.
Absolutely. Speaking of the women's game, coming up next, how about the life of an elite pro? You know, we think about the glamour, but there's also some tough journeys and some tough stories that you usually don't get to hear about. Coming up, we're going to meet Bryn Walker, who shares the trials and lessons she's learned along her journey.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet. Live your bet life. Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Second week in the LPGA's Q Series underway at Highland Oaks in Dothan, Alabama. Q Series made up of two 72-hole stroke play events held consecutive weeks with scores carrying over to the second week. It's grueling. Cut was made after the first week to the low 70 and ties. Here's the current leaderboard. They had some fog issues in Alabama. And Tia Tidical is a familiar name. She's actually contended at a AIG Women's British Open. And here she is trying to play her way on to the LPGA Tour.
Well, I tell you, Rich, the life of an elite pro may be glamorous, but the journey to get there, usually anything but. GolfChannel.com featuring a series this week focusing on the process of turning professional. And it is not easy. A fantastic series right now on GolfChannel.com. I highly recommend it. Today, Emilia Migliaccio focuses on the reality of turning pro, Bryn Walker's lessons learned, and the long run. And right now we're joined by Bryn Walker from Charlotte. We appreciate your time. Happy holidays. Why was it important to you, Bryn, to share your story of turning pro, the highs, lows, challenges, and swing changes and everything that goes with it?
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. You know, it was just important to me in college. I took a class and started writing, and we had to think about what we wanted to write about. And so I was like, I love golf and I love inspiration, and I just wish that someone who has accomplished what I want to accomplish had kind of documented how they got there, the highs, lows, everything in between, and just an authentic documentation. So I figured I might as well be the person to do it and hopefully get where I want to get and be able to share and inspire people on how I did it. And that's the main goal, and it's been great for me and great to hear feedback as well.
Bryn, just want to say congratulations on behalf of everybody here at Golf Channel. Just engaged to Trevor Collins, former football player at North Carolina. So a wonderful holiday season for you and Trevor. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we're super excited. Good timing.
You missed out on that Q series that we just talked about. You write a blog and you posted recently lessons from Q school. What were the lessons, and why were you not, as you said, why were you not upset at missing?
Yeah, you know, I so much buildup goes into Q school, and I feel for the girls out there right now and the pressure of it. You're just so close to accomplishing your dream and your goal, and you can feel that. And the first time I went through it, I felt it like crazy, and I tried to change a lot of things before I played, thinking I need to be better and make it. But this time, I just playing a whole season or almost out as a professional, you just realize you want to play consistent golf in the long term. And that week I didn't play good enough to make it a Q series, and I just looked at it as, hey, I need to get better consistently and that'll take me where I need to go. So couldn't hang my head on it. It's just that never really works too well. So I just want to get better and see how good I can get at golf, and it'll take me to where I need to go.
Well, Bryn, the article written by your friend Emilia Migliaccio, you talk about the expenses while chasing your dream on the Symetra Tour, the Airbnbs and the food and the gas. How do you block that out while you're playing, or can you block that out while you're playing?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, when you first start playing for money, it's just a little bit different thinking. But I have great people behind me supporting me, sponsors, and just that helps a lot take away the thought of it. And at the end of the day, you got to stay thinking on the process and think about golf. And that's why you go out to play for the joy of it and to compete. And it's just a game if you're playing for money, if you're not. And it's hard because on Smash Tour, you're not making a lot of money. But I think that you just got to block it out because, you know, thinking about it, it's not going to help. So it's like a lot of things in golf. If you focus on the process, the results take care of itself.
Bryn, curious about some of these details. So on the Symetra Tour, what are the weekly expenses and where do you need to finish on the leaderboard to break even?
Yeah, Amelia and I kind of talked about it and we went through and broke it down. And the entry fees are usually $500. And then I'd say the tournament can cost, depending if you do host housing or Airbnb, like anywhere $1,000 to $2,000 per tournament. And so I think we looked, if you finish usually in the top 10, you'll probably break even. If you make the cut, finish right under there, you'll gain your entry fee back. So yeah, it's definitely really different, but it's fun to stay with people, stay in Airbnbs. That helps the cost a little bit, which I learned later in the year. And actually, you guys just showed the leaderboard, and Pauline was one of the first people that I stayed with at the beginning of the year. So hopefully she finishes off the week strong and makes it on LPGA.
You know, Bryn, I once interviewed former world number one Lee Westwood. I asked him, you know, what are you trying to do in winning a major championship? He said he was looking for a quarter shot around. I just thought that was so poetic. When you look at trying to make it to the highest reaches of this game, you know, what's missing? Where do you have to close the gap?
Yeah, you know, short game, short game, short game. So just a little bit of consistency at the end of the year. After Q school, I broke everything down, and where I can gain the most strokes is short game. So this offseason, that's what I've been working on. And in the article, Amelia and I just talked about just like the dedication and mastery. And so right now it's been fun to me for me to get back into that mindset instead of always focused on performance. So I'm enjoying golf from now. I'm loving it. I'm finding ways to get better and putting, chipping, and scoring just a little bit better. So making some strides right now, which I feel good about, and hopefully be ready for a great season ahead.
I know, according to the article, you're really immersed in the game. You love to look at swings online. Favorite swings in the game, what are they?
Yeah, I'd have to say Rory. I mean, many people probably love that, but Rory, on the girl side, and Van Dam, awesome swing. I'm sure you guys have seen it on the Golf Channel before. Kepka's got a unique one, and I like to look at it for different things. I don't know if I could replicate his whole left arm and stuff, but it's pretty powerful and good.
Well, Bryn, big days for you, clearly. Congratulations on the upcoming nuptials. Merry Christmas. I love the tree, and we hope to talk to you down the road.
Yeah, hope so, too. Merry Christmas to you guys. Have a great holiday season, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Merry
Bye,
Christmas.
Bye, Bryn. Thank Bryn you. Best of luck.
From Charlotte, yeah, North Carolina. Great, great town. Speaking of great, how about bucket list golf? Everybody's got a course they want to play or
where are we going? Where are we going, Big D?
Where are we
D?
Going? Come Architecture on. Week. We're running out of time. Where are we going, Rich? We're back in a bit.
Someplace good.
Welcome back. Golf Today. Architect Week continues. Tell you what, we've got a who's who golf course architecture on the show all week, and we hit them with one very, very tough question.
What's the best par 3, best 4, and the best par 5?
13 at Augusta. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been all talk for years about, oh, we've got to lengthen that. We've got to pull the tee back so that guys can hit driver to where they used to hit driver. But it's still a really hard hole. I mean, you've got to turn the ball over from right to left if you want to drive it into position. And most of these tour players don't want to hit driver that way or not comfortable with it. They'll hit it up in the trees and the pine straw and take a stab from there instead. So to me, that hole still really works well. It's hard to build a hole now that makes a great player want to work the ball. But the best players, they want holes like that. That's what shows their abilities to the max.
Par four at Fisher's Island. I love that blind shot. I mean, it's, in my mind, that is perhaps the greatest walk in golf. When you hit your shot into that punch bowl, it goes over that ridge. And then when you crest that hill, you've got the ocean as a backdrop, and you're looking to see how many balls are on the green and where they are in relation. And those reveals, I think, are always fun.
You know, if I was going to pick a par three that I didn't do, the 10th on Pacific Dunes at Bandon would be fantastic. I mean, there are very few spots that are more visually awe-inspiring than that. It's unusual in that you can't see the putting surface for a par three, so there's all this mystery going on. If you know the green, you know where you've got little bump slopes. You can play into them. You can kick off of them. You can play what you think is a beautiful shot that's going to ricochet into the pin and get up there, and it didn't. Or you can play one that you don't think's very pretty, and hey, presto, you got a tap-in birdie putt. So that would be my par three.
Most famous one-shot hole is probably the Eden at St. Andrews, hole number 11. Ironically, it's a one-shot hole that you could use a putter to get onto the green. My second hole, the fourth, is the Leaven at London Links, where it requires you to attack the green hidden by a dune. You have to play as close to the burn as you can to see the green. And lastly, my par five hole, the three-shotter, is long at St. Andrews, where you have to navigate Hell Bunker. And those are all holes that are difficult to emulate, but I try to think about those in everyday designs.
It got us thinking about bucket list golf courses. Big D, what's your bucket list course?
Wow. Been lucky to play a lot of great places in this game, but I haven't played Royal County Down in Northern Ireland, and there's the old debate. If you go over there, you're either a Port Rush guy or a County Down guy or gal, and I tell you, it just is one of those places that I want to play. It's old Tom Morris, who touched Nairn and Prestwick and Macrahanish in Cruden Bay. Places I've
sounds
played.
Scottish.
I tell you, buddy, in a past life, perhaps.
That's my move right
Who's
there.
Who's that? You've played it.
A little too much knee flex there.
You look good. Were you shouting out your wedges?
Yeah, well, that was after the 2019 Open at Port Rush.
You popped down and played.
Right. That was Andrew Bradley on the left, a great player. Ari Marcus can play. His brother's an aspiring professional.
Okay.
There's a coordinating producer, Alan Robinson, and that's me on the far right.
How'd you play?
Decent. Had you know, ins and outs. Was a little dogged and down early because the course can wear you out. Then I found a little spark. It's a phenomenal walk. It really is. It the contrasting colors, the heather and the gorse, seaside links, great variety of holes, walking only.
Soulful. It sounds soulful.
It is. The signature ninth hole, 485 yards. You come over the hill and you see the famous hotel in the distance and the town. And we have wonderful caddies. One of our guys, I'm not going to name names here, but it's a hard golf course. The caddies are so good. One of our guys came to the final hole and he had like 12 feet for 92. And the caddy looked at it from every angle as if it was a putt to win the Masters. And our guy drilled it.
The caddies, what characters.
So yeah.
You know, hurry up and hit that. You know, aim toward that cloud and hurry up and hit it because it's moving. I mean, they got the stories.
Yeah, no,
they're the best.
It's the best.
How about you?
Well, I'd like to go to Royal Dornoch. I was at Castle Stewart the year that Phil was the...
Yeah.
King of Scotland.
Back to back.
He won Castle Stewart, and then he won the Open at Muirfield. So I had a chance that year to play Nairn late in the day.
Oh.
What's so good about golf over there, is, especially in the summertime, is you can tee off at 8 o'clock
like
at night.
And
if you're hustling, if it's just you or maybe you and a buddy, you can get 18 in. But I never made it up to Royal Dornoch. I'd love to get up to the Highlands and... That spiritual journey to the home of Donald Ross.
I've been 2007 before covering the Open at Carnoustie, myself and some golf writers, Mark Canizero of the New York Post, and Hank Gola from the New York Daily News. We drove up there 4 hours, flew into Edinburgh. So we drive 4 hours and play right off the plane after an overnight flight. I had no legs. Does that make sense? I had no legs. I didn't play well.
You didn't play
well?
I'm
no good, but I didn't play well. But the flowers were very, very pretty. They were yellow.
Pretty. That's how you know you haven't had a good round. You come off the golf course, and your buddies say, how'd you play? You know, the flower bed at number 11 is so beautiful, and it is translated. I shot 90.
Exactly. I wish I shot 90.
It's a beautiful day out there, 94.
I'll never forget
when
the
you don't
flowers.
Get, when you don't get a number, when you don't get, I made three birdies.
Exactly.
Right, when you go to the beauty of the ambiance, you know you didn't put a score on the
board.
Yeah,
I drew the collar. But is it still a good walk?
Regardless,
stunning walk, Donald Ross.
Do you leave civilization?
Oh my gosh, it's the end of the world.
Feeling?
It's the end of the earth. There, it is gorgeous. I just wish I had more in the tank that day. I'll go back. Maybe we'll go back.
It is dispiriting when you go to a famous golf course or a bucket list course and
best.
You don't have it.
Yeah.
I was in Pine Valley and just played a horrendous round, ate my lunch. It's a lot of golf course if your game is not where it needs to be.
I played the old course one time and I had my game.
Did you?
And it was magic. The Eden course, I made
three. What'd you make it 11?
I made three.
Did you make three?
I didn't putt down the hill either. I actually hit a great shot. The caddy, I was going to hit six or seven. The caddy said, hit the six and just take a little off it. I don't even know what that means, but I swung smoothly. Take a little off it.
We played Turnberry years ago in a driving rainstorm. It was after one of the Opens. I was with my camera guy. And first hole, I mean, it's coming down in buckets, but it's perfect Scottish day. You have to play, right? If you made plans, you have a time. Doesn't matter what the weather's doing, you're playing. And so he had like 150 in, but the wind's coming at us, the rain, and he's between six and seven iron.
Ooh.
And went back and forth, back and forth, too long. Pull the club, we're in a rainstorm, let's go.
Right.
And back and forth between the six and seven, and he finally went to the seven and hit a ground ball about 15 yards, and the caddy looked at him and said, I guess we'll never know, Lottie, will we?
Oh, man.
Well, I love Architect Week, Damon, as I know you do. And when we come back, one of the really good young designers in the game, Rob Collins of Sweetens Cove, will join us.
Back on Golf Today, time now for Design Terminology 101, the definition of a revetted bunker. Bunkers whose face consists of sod or layers of grass instead of sand, also called sod-faced bunkers in certain neighborhoods. You see this of a burning revetted bunker faces at Royal Sink Ports right near Sandwich. The burning shows off the revetting work. It looks beautiful. It's a little dangerous, but it looks beautiful. It looks hot. Speaking of hot, Golf Today podcast is hot. If you missed any of the show, any of Architects Week, we had on the show some of the great people in the game. You can listen to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Here's a really good golf course, Sweetens Cove. It's in Marion County, Tennessee, in the Sequatchie Valley, 25 minutes from Chattanooga, within 2 hours of Atlanta, Nashville, and Birmingham. 49th in one of the recent rankings. That does look like quite a nice day. Maybe you never make it to the golf course if you get all, what was a half dozen of those down. 49th modern golf courses, 21st golf courses you can play. And the co-designer is Rob Collins, art history major, really a kind of a different background at Sewanee. Graduate degree at Mississippi State. Took a trip to St. Andrews in 1994. And that set the career in motion. And Sweetens Cove is now 7 years old.
Amazing. And we got Rob today, don't we? Rob Collins joins us from Tennessee. It's an ugly sweater Christmas tournament.
That's what it looks like.
Rob,
can we widen out a little bit to just see how that will stack up this week?
We got Matt and Colt on here. We got our logos. So got a big event today at Sweetens Cove. So a lot of fun.
It's going to be a great afternoon. Well, Sweetens Cove, Rob, has achieved cult status so quickly. How does a course like that go from concept to reality?
Well, my partner, Tad King, and I are a design build firm. We got hired to revamp an old nine-hole golf course in the Sequatchie Valley. We did it. And long story short, I became one of the owner-operators after the original clients decided to go back to their concrete business. And a group of us, including Patrick Boyd and I, just, you know, one person at a time, you know, introduced this golf course to people, and slowly, thanks to social media, kind of built an army around Sweetens Cove, and it became what it is today.
What would be sort of a King Collins twist that I might recognize that would be unique to Sweetens Cove that I might not see anywhere else?
Well, I think when you come out to Sweetens Cove, the thing that most people are going to talk about is the abundance of short grass, and then, you know, that combined with the greens, which have quite a bit of contour to them. They always make you think you never get to take a shot off, and you know, if you come out here to Sweetens, that's going to be the big talking point that you're going to really remember from your time out here.
You know, Rob, we spoke to David McClay Kidd yesterday. He mentioned how he had no idea how popular Band and Dudes would become, that Mike Kaiser wondered if 30 parking spaces might be too many. When did you know that Sweetens Cove was something special?
We knew, Tad and I both knew we had something really special on our hands while we were building it, and we just knew that it needed to see the light of day. And, you know, it took a really long time for it to get to where we thought it could be. I never thought that it would be so hard. I never imagined myself in an owner-operator position with the golf course. But, you know, we worked hard and stuck with it, and our partners stuck with us. And it just took off. And over the last couple of years has been when it's really exploded. And it's been fun to finally see it, you know, become a full version of itself. So I couldn't be happier.
Rob, what is overdone in modern architecture and what's not done enough?
Wow, that's a tough one. You know, I think that a little bit of modern architecture right now has a tendency towards almost being too easy. And I'm not saying you need to make golf courses hard, but you need to give people pitfalls and challenges and an opportunity to, you know, challenge a really frightening hazard and feel that, you know, that incredible thrill that you get. And some of the stuff we have at Sweden's Cove can absolutely wreck you, but if you get in the right spot and hit a good shot, you know, you really feel that reward. You know, we have a new golf course out in Homer, Nebraska, coming open in September called Landman. We're doing another one in Texas called Red Feather out in Lubbock. And we like to build a lot of little trap doors in there, the kind of stuff you see in Scotland where, you know, your ball might roll into a bunker and might take you a couple shots to get out. But that's kind of the thrill of golf. And I think that, you know, we need a little bit more daring in our modern architecture, and that's kind of some of the things Tad and I try to do.
Been in a few of those trap doors in my day, Rob. Listen, it's important to have backers of your dream. It's something else when one of those backers is quarterback Peyton Manning, everybody's All-American. How did he get involved?
Well, it's a great story. If you look over my shoulder, there's a book called The Secret Home of Golf, written by my friend Jim Hartzell, that tells the whole story if you're really interested. But The Reader's Digest version is I was introduced to a developer named Mark Rivers, who was friends with Skip Bronson and Andy Roddick, and people were kind of forming into this group, and it was a really amazing story. Those guys actually surprised me with Peyton. Patrick Boyd, one of my original partners, and I used to kind of wax poetic and say, God, wouldn't it be great if Peyton would get involved here one day? And then the next thing I know, you know, Andy and Skip and Tom and Mark surprised me. We had a dinner out at this restaurant in Chattanooga, and in walked Peyton Manning. And he walks up to me and says, hey, I'm Peyton Manning. And I said, I'm right. And Mark sits over my shoulder, and there's your fifth partner. And it brings tears to my eyes every time I think about it. He's just an amazing guy. He's everything you think he is. He's smart and focused and driven and great to be around. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have a great group of people around this place.
Yeah, you and I were talking before the show about Stephen Curry, whom we featured earlier, about most down-to-earth, humble, great athletes we've encountered.
Yeah.
I said, Stephen, and you, having worked for the New York Times, covered all sports with Sports Illustrated, you said...
My favorite, Peyton Manning.
Was Peyton Manning.
Him, yeah.
I'm just curious, Rob, how does an art history major become a golf course architect?
Well, it's certainly a long and circuitous route. A lot of my friends kind of laughed at me when I told them I wanted to be an art history major. I had an interest in artistic creation and so forth. And I ended up going back to Mississippi State to get a master in landscape architecture. And that helped me, you know, get over the edge and kind of find my way into the business. And in 2006, on a project down in Florida, I met my partner, Tad King. And Tad and I, you know, felt like there was a better way to do things using a design build method. And, worked for Mr. Player for a few years, and that was great. But the economy kind of forced our hand when it crashed in 2008. And I called Tad and I said, hey, man, let's do this. And we felt like if we can just get one course in the ground, you know, we can prove what we can do. And we were fortunate to have Sweetens fall in our laps, and that's that.
Well, Rob, we'll leave you with this. We've been asking architects all week their favorite par 3, par 4, and par 5. It can't be one that you designed.
Favorite par 3, I'd have to say the Eden hole at St. Andrews. Favorite par 4, number 7 at Sand Hills. And favorite par 5, number 14 at the old course, St. Andrews. I had to double up on the old course.
Fantastic.
How many people have said Eden?
A lot of votes
for
Eden.
The 11th hole.
Where I made 3.
Well, I made 5 there and hit an absolutely what I thought was a perfectly struck 5-iron into a breeze, into a wind, and buried it in the bunker.
One of those trap doors. Hey, Rob, it's great seeing you. Best of luck swinging in that sweater, and we hope to talk to you soon, buddy.
See you, Rob.
Honor to be on. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Have a great holiday.